Tariff shadow, when a tax collected at the border shows up on a receipt. When coffee prices rise, people blame the beans. Sometimes they blame the exchange rate, and sometimes they blame logistics. But on certain days, it's not the beans, not the exchange rate, and not logistics. Some number set at the border quietly shakes the cost of everyday life. That is how tariffs work. In the language of politics, they can sound like a fine imposed on foreigners, but in the language of economics, they are usually closer to a tax shared and paid domestically. Someone pays first, then someone pays a higher price, and in the end, someone's paycheck rises less. What makes tariffs frightening is that this process does not appear as a clear bill, but rather emerges mixed in among countless price tags and contracts. Recently, Donald Trump's tariff push has returned to the center of debate. The core question is simple. If tariffs go up, do the other side truly bear the cost, or does the cost circulate inside the United States and ultimately land on consumers? A range of empirical studies and policy analyses generally say it is closer to the latter. Tariffs show up first as costs for importers and firms, and those costs are ultimately spread domestically through channels such as prices, margins, wages, and the pace of investment. This is where tariff shadow begins. Tariffs are both a tool that hits and a device that reallocates burdens. Some industries are protected, and some regions may get temporary relief. On the other hand, some households' shopping baskets become more expensive, some firms' investment plans are delayed, and some supply chains are retied in a higher cost direction. Let's examine where this shadow falls and why the outlook ahead cannot be predicted by the tariff rate alone. The nature of tariffs. Who pays first and who pays in the end? Tariffs are collected at customs. Legally, the importer pays. But economically, what matters is not who remits payment to customs, but who ultimately bears the burden. An importer could absorb a tariff as a cost and stop there, but more often the choice is to absorb some of the cost, pass it along embedded in prices, or change the form of the product. This process splits into several paths. Direct pass-through. The price of imported goods rises. Consumers either buy the same product at a higher price or shift to cheaper substitutes. Indirect pass-through. Domestic products that competed with imports raise prices, treating reduced competitive pressure as an opportunity. Tariffs do not only make imports more expensive, they can push up the price baseline for the entire market. Form pass-through. Keeping the sticker price the same while shrinking volume, changing quality and components, or altering service terms. From the consumer's perspective, it feels like some kind of loss, but it can be less visible in official price indexes. Time lag pass-through. Tariffs are imposed today, but prices rise months later. Inventory must be depleted, contracts renewed, and distribution reorganized. That is why the lived experience of tariffs arrives late and fades late. In this sense, the claim that prices didn't explode right away is only half true. The fact that the average value called prices does not jump immediately does not mean the burden disappears. The burden is dispersed in forms such as margins, wages, delayed upgrades, quality deterioration, and reduced choice. The political sentence, foreigners pay, and the economic sentence, we share the cost at home. Tariffs are popular because the message is simple. Punish an unfair counterpart. Bring jobs back. Gain leverage in negotiations. These sentences reach voters easily. By contrast, the sentence, tariffs can reshape domestic cost structures, distort price signals, and erode consumers' purchasing power, is long and difficult. So tariff debates often flow in a structure where political intuition beats economic mechanisms. But the wider tariff spread, the more the question, who is losing, descends into more people's daily lives. If auto parts rise, repair bills rise. If home appliances rise, the cost of living rises. If industrial components rise, the delivery prices of small and mid-sized manufacturers wobble. Tariffs are sometimes felt first not as consumer prices, but as the inconvenience of living costs. Where tariff shadow grows darkest, not the average, but the distribution. If you calculate the tariff burden as how much per citizen, it is easy to understand. But reality explodes not in the average, but in the distribution. The same additional $100 burden is for someone a single phone bill, and for someone else a week of groceries. Tariffs tend to have a regressive character. When prices rise for essentials, parts, and everyday consumer goods, lower-income households take a bigger hit. And lower-income households have less room to escape through substitution. If cheaper brands also fall within the tariff's reach, choices shrink. Regions differ, too. Regions concentrated in industries protected by tariffs may politically develop the sense that it works. Meanwhile, regions with high consumption weight, distribution, and service-centered regions feel it got expensive first. This gap creates a powerful emotional rift in elections. The politics of tariffs harden when they are translated not as the interest of the nation, but the interest of our region, and they shake when they are translated as the burden of our household. The corporate shadow: raise prices, delay investment, or redraw the supply chain. Even if the direct target of tariffs is imported goods, what firms feel at the core is cost and uncertainty. Cost is simple. You must pay more. Uncertainty runs deeper. Will the same tariffs remain next quarter? Will exceptions appear? Will the other side retaliate? Will rules change? Because firms build factories based not only on current costs but on future rules, tariff shocks can be greatly amplified through investment sentiment. Another shadow is the easing of competition. A market protected by tariffs can catch its breath in the short run, but in the long run, the tension that drives innovation and productivity can weaken. For tariffs to look like industrial policy, what is needed is not protection alone, but conditions and design that lead to technological accumulation and productivity gains. If there is protection without conditions, tariffs can give firms time, but not direction. The shadow of law and institutions. When tariffs become a market risk premium, the impact of tariffs on the economy depends not only on the tariff rate, but on the authority that enables them and their sustainability. When disputes over authority and interpretation drag on, tariffs harden into an unpredictable policy. In that situation, what harms the economy most is not tariffs themselves, but the persistence of uncertainty. When firms lack confidence, they delay investment, become conservative in hiring, and design inventory and pricing strategies defensively. If rules do not stabilize, markets respond with caution rather than relief. The shadow on allies and counterparts, retaliation, deals, and the diplomacy of tariffs. When tariffs grow, counterparts do not sit still. Retaliation is both an economic calculation and a political calculation. Often retaliatory tariffs target the other side's sensitive districts, symbolic industries, and politically large industries. That is why tariff wars often pierce more sharply into political vulnerabilities than into economic rationality. At the same time, tariffs can also be a bargaining chip. Tariffs operate not only as a device to restrain imports, but as a tradable currency. They are translated into the language of diplomacy in the form of demanding expanded purchases or investment commitments in exchange for lowering certain tariffs. As a result, world trade can shift from being centered on efficiency to being centered on belonging. Instead of making things cheaper, firms make them in safer places. Instead of selling farther, they sell to closer friends. Supply chains shift from long, thin optimization to shorter, thicker redundancy. This change raises costs in the short term, but in the long term, it creates a new standard of block formation. Tariffs do not end. They change form. If you summarize the future of tariffs in one sentence, it is this. Tariffs are more likely to move toward redesign than repeal. Tariffs have already become a political tool. They offer the temptation of fiscal revenue and negotiating leverage, and full repeal triggers resistance from protected interests. So the future of tariffs generally flows into one of three paths. Entrenched high tariffs, a new normal. If high tariffs persist, firms establish a new price system. Once prices rise, they rarely come down. Supply chains are rewoven on the assumption of tariffs, and factories are invested in on that same assumption. In this path, the key variable is not prices themselves, but real income. When the feeling that living cost burdens have grown spreads broadly through the middle class, tariffs change color from a symbol of patriotism to a burden of living. Selective easing, the technique of targeting. Even if easing happens, full repeal is rare. Instead, targeting intensifies. Politically sensitive items are lowered, while industrially symbolic items are maintained or strengthened. Targeting can reduce burdens, but it also raises firms' compliance and administrative costs. Firms must determine who is exempt, what qualifies as origin, and what share of parts triggers a different rate. Institutional constraints, prolonged uncertainty. The bigger the conflicts over authority and procedures become, the more tariffs harden into an unpredictable policy. In that case, even if tariff rates fall somewhat, the economic feel may not improve. If rules do not stabilize, firms do not easily expand investment and hiring. New questions for measuring tariff shadow. If you end tariff debates with for slash against, the same fight repeats every time because the costs and benefits tariffs create are distributed differently across groups. So, what matters going forward is not value judgments but measurement questions. The longer the policy lasts, the more specific the questions must become. Household questions. Not prices, but how much has real income fallen? Not the average, but how much has the lower income group's felt burden increased? Corporate questions. Is tariff-induced investment net new or insurance? What traces does the cost of supply chain relocation leave on productivity? Political questions. Did the industries protected by tariffs translate that protection into performance? Did the time of protection become the time of innovation? Diplomatic questions. Did tariffs function as negotiating leverage, or did they amplify retaliation and fractures? The cost of tariffs begins at the border, but the place that cost remains is inside the border. And the more widely that cost spreads, the more it becomes clear that tariffs can persist only on top of citizens' ability to pay, not merely national power. This is the point at which tariff shadow becomes truly frightening. Strong policy begins with strong will, but it survives by changing form in the face of the strong pressure of living costs. If tariffs do not disappear, what we must prepare for is not the number of the tariff rate, but the structure of daily life that tariffs reshape. Price tags, choices, jobs, and even the cost that comes under the name of security.